Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today we've got Cassidy Warren, super cool guest. I think we have a lot of common ground here, so I'll have a lot of questions. And he's got a pretty cool story about leaving the corporate world and getting full-time into short-term rentals and looks like van life too, which I love to hear about. So without further ado, Cassidy, how's it going?
Good, Avery. Thanks for having me on. Excited to talk today.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I'm excited to interview you. So first off, just tell everybody a little bit about yourself, who you are, how you got into vacation rental investing.
Yeah, definitely. I grew up pretty frugal, lived in a frugal family, typical like middle class, save your money, you know, get a job, go to college, get a degree, work in the corporate world. And I had always sort of liked building big things. I taught myself how to program when I was a kid, like building websites. I was building computers. I was doing that sort of stuff. And so that sort of turned into an engineering career. And I was fortunate enough to be given a lot of responsibility at building these big, big infrastructure projects at this corporate job that I was working. And I was like kind of hopping around a lot. As I was learning and then growing, I would move on and learn and grow more. And I ended up on this massive IT project and was just getting real burned out, real tired of everything that I was seeing. And at the time, I was like, oh, I want to climb. I want to be an executive. I want to run the company, right? That was sort of the direction that I was headed. And then I was looking at all of the executives and the people around me, and I wasn't really getting inspired by them anymore. I saw the amount of work that was going into what they were doing, and it was all just for the company, right? And I had thought that maybe once I reach a certain point, things would change or it would be different or fulfillment in some way, right? And so I was finding that as I moved up, the energy and the work sort of changed. By the time that I quit my corporate job, and I can talk about that, but by the time that I quit, I was just having like conflict conversations all the time. It was every day was about 8 to 10 hours of resolving conflicts. And that's not where I like to live. That's not the energy that I like to have. And so I ended up leaving my job. I quit my job. But before that, the way that I got into real estate, without even really knowing sort of what I was doing or what it was called at the time, but it was through house hacking. But it wasn't the traditional house hacking of a full-time tenant or full-time renter. We had actually gone up to Vancouver. We're in the Seattle area. Went up to Vancouver. It was for a concert. We stayed in an Airbnb for the first time. This is back in like 2015. And I didn't know it at the time, but we were staying with the host. And
oh,
I was...
Goodness. Oh my God.
Yeah. But it's old school Airbnb. That's what it was, right? And I didn't know. My wife knew. And I just wasn't paying attention or something. And so I was a little bit like, I showed up. I was like, oh, this is kind of weird. Like, I didn't realize, but.
Oh my God, that gives me so much anxiety. My husband would be so embarrassing if that happened and I knew and he didn't know. I can't imagine. Sorry, go ahead.
I can hold it together. I knew it was my own thing and like, I should have known. But what ended up happening, it was like one of the best experiences ever. The host's name were Terry and Selena. And we got to know them so well that they actually ended up going to the concert that we were going to, like with us and hanging out. And
that's my worst nightmare. Like, leave me alone.
normally, I'm with you. Normally, I would. And it was a big festival. So it's not like we, you know, spent the whole time together. But they ended up sharing all their secrets with us. And they were like, basically, we had little mentors in Airbnb in that one weekend. And because we had sort of been thinking about. Yeah. And so they told us, you know, get the multiple bed sheets, do the turns yourself. Here's how you screen guests, right? Because they're staying in your house. And so we left that weekend motivated to go list our spare bedroom on Airbnb. And you should see the photos. I can share them. But we got it ready, the spare bedroom, little bottles of water, some magazines, you know, this, you know, making it sort of nice. But we only had one bathroom in the condo at the time. And so we listed it on Airbnb and we started getting a bunch of bookings. And we have like Google and Facebook and Amazon are nearby. And so it was a lot of like individual consultants or couples coming to visit their families, stuff like that. And we had rented it out for like $35 a night. And our goal was to pay our mortgage. That was like, hey, let's try to pay our mortgage by doing this. And we ended up paying for about like 90% of the mortgage. But I was coming home from my lunch break, like, and cleaning and turning the spare bedroom. And my wife would do that. We were messaging the guests. And so that really allowed us to learn everything that we needed to know about running an Airbnb, right? We had done that for about 2 years, off and on, depending on what we were doing or where we were. And so then by the time we quit our jobs, and the purpose of us quitting our jobs was to go live in the van and go figure out what we wanted to do with the rest of our lives, right? We didn't even have headspace to be able to figure out what was next, because our pattern, our daily routine was wake up, commute to work, go to work for 8 to 10 hours, commute, dinner, and go to bed, and just repeat that entire cycle every single day. And so we didn't even have any room to think about what we wanted to do with the rest of our lives. So
this episode is brought to you by Short-Term Shop Plus. Are you looking for someone to help you analyze a deal? Do you want instant access to lectures on management and short-term rental success? Join Short-Term Shop Plus for all of your vacation rental needs. STS Plus is open to the public and offered for the first time at a tremendous value. Also included is world-famous Management Monday, a weekly live session with everything you need to know about setting up your property and learning how to manage from a distance. Join today at stsplus.com. That's stsplus.com.
What kind of van was it? I need to know.
Yeah, so this is a funny story because a lot of people do the Volkswagens, right? That's like the classic, but I didn't want to be broken down on the side of the road.
Right.
They're notorious, right? And so I found that there's these Japanese imports. So there's Mitsubishis and Toyotas. And I found a Toyota diesel, which should be like the most reliable van out there, because it's a Toyota, it's a diesel, like they're well known for being super reliable. We ended up having to replace the motor twice. And
oh,
we were broken down constantly for a bunch of different reasons. And it was, you know, looking back, it was like the universe telling us to like stop doing this and go back and do what you're supposed to be doing, which at the time was investing in real estate and getting back to work to go be able to do those things. So we lasted like 6 months and we were very persistent, but it was just by the time we got rid of the van, it was, you know, we smiled and felt like a huge weight off of our shoulders for getting rid of it. But
ooh, yeah, we had an Airstream van for like 6 months last year because we used to do a month-long motorhome trip every year. We did it 3 years in a row. And then Luke, my husband, was like, I'm so tired of having constant anxiety while I'm driving that the Jeep's going to come unhooked, even though it's not. We've done all the things. He's like, it's just so stressful to drive this big, huge thing with a Jeep attached to it. So let's downsize. So we downsized to a van and we made it 2 weeks and turned around and came home and sold the van. Like, this is not cool.
Yeah, that's the reason we got a van too, was to not have to tow anything or have a big truck camper and heights and, you know, and easier to drive and all that. And it still ended up just being a little bit too much.
Yeah. I think I'm a motorhome girl. We are not in the right season of life right now for that, but we'll go back to it at some point. Anyway. Okay. So let's talk about, so you've gotten really good at renting this room in your house, which good for you. Like I could not, I just couldn't. I can't, don't have it in me, but good for you. So when did you transition from that into buying your first single family?
Yeah. So we had been doing the spare bedroom for a few years. We quit our jobs. And then as soon as the van was done, I ended up going and basically doing some consulting work. So what I was sort of doing previously, but started doing consulting, I knew that we needed some income to be able to qualify for loans and be able to buy properties. And we didn't know about raising capital or any of that back then, right? So the only way that we knew how to do this was to go buy conventionally through either investor loans or second home loans. And so we started doing a lot of research, my wife and I, and we had a limited budget at the time. And so within 6 to 8 months after quitting our jobs, we had decided that we were going to invest in Cleveland, Ohio, as a lot of investors do. They go out to the Midwest. And my wife toured about 20 properties. I was at home working. She went and found the house. And we closed on it. And 3 weeks later, had it live, which is sort of insane. And it was like pure chaos. I ended up flying out and helping with some of the construction, project management, sourcing, all this stuff. And so I would say within 2 months of us going back to work after the van trip to when we were live on Airbnb with our first house. And that was a huge win for us because we were doing a bunch of research, analysis paralysis, but we ended up deciding on a place that we had never been to. It was a business decision. And we were really proud of what we had done because we focused on design, amenities, and creating core memories and core experiences for families and friends that were coming into town in a great neighborhood too. Really nice family-friendly neighborhood.
Okay. So you know the term core memories, and I just got back from Disney World with my kids who are the right age for this. So sorry. Was not a thing until the movie Inside Out. And now it's like a regular part of our vocabulary.
I absolutely love that movie. That's one of my favorite movies. Yes. And I can't wait. Like it gets me a little emotional watching it. I know it's just like they hit all the feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's cute. We're going to make an evening of it with the kids when it comes out. Anyway, completely off topic. So how did you choose Cleveland? It kind of sounds like you just kind of did some research, didn't really know anything about it. How'd you make that decision? Because I also want to call out that you're an engineer, and engineer personality types are not typically the type to say, I'm gonna go live in a van for a little while and then be able to pick a property fairly quickly. You guys tend to like to draw out the analysis process, and there's a right and only way, and I'm going to find it if it takes me 10 years to do. So all that sounds a little like not engineering. So I'd love to hear how you chose that and how you chose it.
It sounds like you've worked with some engineers in your life.
Yeah, we have a lot of engineer clients.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that you asked that because this is sort of part of my entrepreneurial journey. Is throughout my career, I've always been told I'm different. Like, Cassidy, you are not a typical engineer. One of the most common things that they would say is, you know how to talk to people, which I always thought was kind of funny. Something that I really prided myself on, and I didn't have a term for it or a phrase for it, but there's sort of like fail fast or, you know, that sort of phrasing around stuff now. But throughout my career, I would test and iterate and make decisions really quickly based on the information that I had at hand, but I had a team of people around me that were maybe better at being the traditional engineers to help support decision making and think of different ideas and things. But I was always sort of the leader, the driver, the project manager while doing the engineering work. And so I think with a lot of this, so Cleveland was a good example because there were good numbers to support what we were doing. Whereas a lot of other markets, especially the next one that we went into, which was down in Tucson, we never would have bought in Tucson if we just relied on the numbers. So a lot of this was, okay, we can't get analysis paralysis. We ran a ton of numbers. I was learning the data. So I was like, oh, okay, change the zip code, 32, 42, 43, depending on the type of house. And I could kind of understand what the numbers would do. And so I started learning the data, and then that was like, okay, it's really going to be based on what we can do with our design and our amenities. And so we really have to trust ourselves that we're going to do something really cool. And even if we, like at that time, we weren't trying to like hit a home run. It was like, if we can make $1,000 a month, then that feels really good. because then we're doing it. We're starting. We're doing what we said we were going to do. And it's the first step in the process. And so I think just taking action and trusting yourself, not getting analysis paralysis, is really important. And so, like I said, when we went down into Tucson, none of the numbers supported what we were doing. But I knew we could do it. I knew how gorgeous it was down there. I knew how much we loved it. So we got a little emotional because we love Tucson, which is not always like the best thing to do in real estate. But we also picked really great properties in really great locations. And really what ended up happening throughout our journey, because we're at 9 properties now. And what ended up happening is as we continued to go, we learned a lot of lessons from the past of, oh, well, we didn't replace the appliances, or we didn't do this and we didn't do this. And so we started doing bigger and bigger renovations on the properties. So we knew our design needed to hit. We wanted to elevate our design. And we were basically hedging against like the numbers, right? It's like, okay, well, if the cash flow doesn't work out, one, we're going to do everything we can to make it work. And then two, we're going to sort of treat this like a really nice flip, like a luxury flip. And so being able to approach it from that perspective is we had multiple ways of exit on these properties. So we could either keep it and we cash flow really well because we knocked it out of the park, or we could end up long-term renting because that could work too. We wouldn't make as much money, but the numbers still support it. Or we could, because we did such a good job on the flip, we could turn around and we could sell it and make a decent profit. And so we left ourselves multiple outs and changed the way that we approached these properties sort of as like the third one came along.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com. If you like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us.
I'm interested to hear about this Tucson property, because that's kind of the way I like to see people, and it's worked for me. So I think it's really important that when you're trying to decide on a market, that you choose a market that you're familiar with, or at least a market that is like a market you're familiar with. Like, I grew up in Starkville, Mississippi, which is an SEC football town. I feel like I could buy a property in basically any SEC football town and do all right, because I understand who's coming there and what the town does and is. But I think a lot of people get so hung up on looking only at numbers and I got to find something that nobody's ever heard of. And it sounds like you went into Cleveland solely because of the numbers, but you went into Tucson because you knew the market. So I'd like to hear some more about how that has performed for you.
Yeah, Tucson, we've done extremely well. And the funny thing is we discovered Tucson on the van trip. We broke down in Tucson. And when I tell this story to other people, they're like, oh yeah, I broke down in Tucson. Or people know people that just ended up in Tucson because they broke down. And so while I was there, it was like 2 weeks, we were waiting on parts. I drove and actually rode those city bikes. They have like the yellow, like every city's got them, the bikes that you can rent to ride around town. I rode that bike to every corner of Tucson, and Tucson's surrounded by 4 mountain ranges. Yeah. And so it's surrounded by 4 mountain ranges. And I basically went into all the mountains and I went in through all the neighborhoods, and just through driving around or riding around, I was able to find all the best neighborhoods, right? I was looking at real estate. I didn't even know I was necessarily doing this at the time. I was sort of distracting myself from being stuck, but we found all the best neighborhoods. And so we knew, coming from where we are in Seattle, we love the mountains and we love sort of tapping into nature. And so that's the approach that we sort of took going into Tucson. Is it's got this different vibe to it where, yes, you can make resort style properties, which is what we really focus on, is pools, hot tubs, sort of bring in the Scottsdale, the Joshua Tree, the minimalist, quiet, peaceful vibes, but also do it in places that are really private, out in nature, or bring the nature into the property. And then Tucson's really well known for its gem show. Everyone from all over the world comes to the gem show in February. And so we sort of play on that a lot, like different vibes of, you know, gems and crystals, and like just Tucson's got a little bit of a quirky vibe, which we love. And so we sort of play into that a little bit without being weird or over the top or, you know, just, you know, so again, what we've done there is pick really great properties in really great neighborhoods. And we cater to couples and families that want a resort private vibe, right? And we looked at all the comps and nobody was really doing anything that amazing. Or there was like these mega mansions that were way overpriced and they weren't getting booked. And so we sort of came in, you know, somewhere in that range where we were way outperforming on the design and amenities, but we weren't as expensive as the top tier properties. And I think that's a really good place to try to be as long as the numbers work out. And so the way the numbers work out for us is we're number one, definitely on occupancy. We're somewhere at the 75% range for ADR. And so we like a good occupancy and ADR number together, RevPAR. And we focus on the design and amenities. And then again, the upgrades that we did, like on this last one, and this was our fifth one, we added a bathroom, we redid the other bathrooms, like we really focused on making sort of a magazine worthy property. And we redid the casita, we added a pool, like we spent a ton of money. But when you look at what the property is going to be worth after the fact, we're going to more than double our initial investment on that, right? And so what I see nowadays, I'm seeing it more and more, where people are putting so much money into the properties up front on just a cash flow, and they're going crazy with the designs. And I think it's really cool, like what people are doing, that you got the neon signs, you got these specific like bachelorette properties, and like people are really going all out to make these Airbnbs cash flow. But I don't know, and I don't think that they're getting the value out of the property when they do that, right? And so if you have a $400,000 house that you're buying, maybe you put another $200,000 to $300,000 into it to make it cash flow, it's not going to be worth $700,000 after the fact. And so a lot, I'm worried about a lot of these folks out there that are getting underwater just to make the property cash flow.
Yeah. You know, I've seen that on the sales side. So we have listed a few properties that have been really, really heavily themed, like over the top themed. And I would call it in the luxury space. And we've had a hard time with buyers because their feedback is always like, oh, you know, at this price point for how big this house is and the location, we want elegance, not murals on the walls and all these crazy things. So that is something to think about. Like it does increase your income, but it doesn't always increase your equity.
That's right. Yeah. And so we were trying to do both, right? Which is something that I'm guilty of, is like trying to get everything all at once. But I think we've done a really good job of doing that, where we have a really good amount of cash flow, and I think we're only 50% leveraged across all our properties based on the values. Yeah. And so that's a lot of my advice to people is, yeah, you need to try to cash flow, but you're like, you don't want to put a ton of money into a house that's just not going to have the ARV after the fact. And that's one of the big reasons why I'm moving into hotels, is because the valuation is off of the bottom line
income. Yes.
Yes. Like it just, it changes everything when, like for me, all the work that we've put into these properties, it's just not scalable. And I think the only way to really scale it is you have to go bigger. You have to buy more expensive properties and put more into them so that, number one, you can hire like a designer and a property manager and a project manager and a company to come out and furnish the whole thing. But you can't do that when the house is a $300,000 house, right? There's just not the you're not ever going to make your money back by investing in that way. And so like really the only way to scale is, I think, to go bigger. And so, or you're just doing all the work yourself. And I just, that formula doesn't really work for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that's the big move for me to transition into boutique hotels.
I love the idea. I've never bought one, and it's not like on my short list of things I'm doing right this second, but I'd totally buy one. I just haven't done it, but you're right. Like that's the same reason we scaled from single family long-terms into multifamily. There was a day that we had 9 closings in one day. And we were like, why don't we just buy an apartment building with 9 units and have one closing? Cause this is kind of annoying to have to sign all this stuff. So then we started investing in multifamily. So same thing, by increasing the income, you're increasing the value of the property. Whereas in single family residential, and maybe one day banks and lending institutions will catch up to short-term rental single family. But for now, they're still valued as a residential property, which means it doesn't matter if you made $2 zillion on your property last year. In the eyes of the lenders, it's worth the same as the house next door that's not a rental at all. So until banks start looking at short-term rentals as more like the mini hotels that they really are, you're going to run into that. And doing a boutique hotel is a great way to scale out of that, like you said.
Yeah, I totally agree. No one that I know of has been able to sell their Airbnb portfolio as a commercial asset yet. And so that's basically what you're talking about is, could I right now take our 9 properties and sell it as a portfolio that's valued more than each property individually because of the amount of money that it makes? Nobody's been able to do that yet. And I think if banks even start to do that, you're going to have really specific criteria, like no regulations or existing regulations. Like it's not really going to be worth the same multiple as a boutique hotel. So it'll just take a while to get there. And so people's houses are just worth what they're worth, unlike, like we said, the boutique hotels. So yeah. And the other thing with the hotels is and I've been calling brokers. I've been talking to a bunch of people. We closed on a hotel back in April. It's like the same story right now. It's baby boomers that are tired of running the property. They want to get out. This is their retirement. Or they recently passed away and the kids or the estate owns it and they don't want to run it. And people are really looking to offload these boutique hotels and they haven't been updated. A lot of them are in really good condition in great locations. It's just that they don't have the time, energy, or money to want to run them. And so there's a huge opportunity out there right now for people to go pick up these assets, but it requires that you likely go raise money, right? Typically it's not an individual buying a hotel. It's a group or it's a capital company or, you know, everyone's pooling their money together, or you got to go out and raise the money. And that's what I had to do on the hotel that we closed on back in April. And that was me getting over a big fear, I think, of going out and raising money and asking friends and family and say, hey, I'm buying this hotel. I know it's kind of crazy, but like I've been doing this a long time and this is a really good deal. And, you know, can I get you to invest? And so that was a big hurdle for me in life, I think, to be able to go and ask for money, especially coming from like debt is bad and do things on your own and grind and, you know, to now go be asking for money. But it's because I believe in what I'm doing and I believe in the asset. So
where is the hotel that you bought?
It's in Solvang, California, which is one of the like Dutch towns. I think Fredericksburg is one. Like it's got the windmill. Everything is sort of Scandinavian themed. Okay. It's about an hour from Santa Barbara. It's in wine country. And there's these three towns that are out there that are all sort of a different flavor of California wine country outside of Santa Barbara. And so Solvang is the main one with the most hotels, and it's that Dutch, Danish style town. But it's a 24 unit, which is sort of a really great number of units to have. It's not too big, not too small, self-check-in. And it's two buildings, and it actually has a duplex on the property as well that we're going to work on getting rezoned to be a short-term rental. Great bones. And the competitive advantage that we have on that hotel compared to the other hotels in town is we have a ton of outdoor garden space. So there's two giant gardens, whereas a lot of the other hotels in town are just a hotel in a parking lot. And so we're a couple blocks off the main drag, so it's quieter. And we're going to create this really amazing space with fire pits, and everyone can kind of hang out and lounge out either together or in their own separate little area. We're going to make it pet friendly. So it's a really exciting project, but it took a lot of work working with the broker and the owner and then raising the money to close on the deal.
Yeah. Doesn't it always, when stuff is worth doing, it's always a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was different because we had to do creative finance, which is another benefit of doing hotels, is a lot of the people that own these hotels, they bought it under creative finance when they originally bought it. So they did seller financing when they originally bought it. And so they're really open to doing seller financing with you. We did have to get a bridge loan, but we did like sub-2 seller financing and a bridge to get to close. But even with all that, the numbers look really good, and it's been performing really well. The other benefit that I like to talk about with hotels is that as soon as we closed, we were making money, right? We didn't have to go in. I didn't have to go design. I didn't have to hire a contractor and be there. I didn't have to unbox, you know, all these Amazon packages. So like the, you know, with an Airbnb, it could take months depending on the extent of furnishing or renovations. When you buy an existing hotel, when you close, you're making money already. The business is running.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And it's definitely, if you're looking to scale, a really great way to do that. So maybe one of these days I'll get around to buying one.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I will at some point. So we're coming towards the end of the show, running out of time, and we have three questions that we ask all of our guests. And the first one is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Cassidy?
Yeah, 20-year-old Cassidy needs to connect with people more, especially around the things that he wants to do. So getting in community sooner and getting around people that are doing bigger things and are more experienced than I am. And I maybe thought that I was like the smartest guy in the room. And so that maybe felt good, especially in my 20s. But I'm realizing now that I should have been trying to get into bigger rooms, be around bigger people, bigger money, bigger deals, bigger projects, whatever it is, based on the things that I wanted to do at that time. But getting in community and getting, like, building my network out with people that are doing bigger, better things. I think not letting my ego getting in the way of achieving true success and true happiness. I think that's a big thing, like whatever that means to somebody, but being okay doing the work to achieve. And then don't let the work consume you. And so that was a mistake of the past 5 years, is these Airbnbs. I was so excited about investing in real estate and the COVID boom and low interest rates and all this. I really let a lot of the things that I enjoyed and the things that helped me be me, I let those kind of go to the wayside. And so I would absolutely say prioritize yourself first, take care of yourself first, number one, and then that will lead into you being able to be the best version of yourself for whatever it is that you're doing.
Great advice. And next question, what advice would you give a new investor who's looking to get started today?
Yeah, the difference between people that own real estate and the people that don't own real estate is that they took action to go buy property, right? That's just, it's a simple fact that if you're taking action every single day, then you're going to ultimately achieve your goals, right? Consistency over a long period of time of taking action equals results. And it's not going to look and feel like maybe you think it will, but taking steps every single day, stop thinking about it. Also stop saying, I'm thinking about buying real estate. Say, I'm buying real estate. I'm buying a house. I'm buying a property, right? It's totally different when you actually say those words. If you're saying I'm thinking about it, then you're always just going to be thinking about it and you're not going to actually do it. And so go call realtors. Number one, like pick a market, like pick your thing, whether it's wholesaling or long-term rentals or multifamily or short-term, like pick your thing, just pick one and then go take action to go do that one thing, right? If you're already making money at a job, and then I wouldn't do wholesaling. If you have no money and you're like needing to figure something out and you're a good salesman, go do wholesaling. But for everyone listening to this show, it was short-term rentals. So yeah. And the other thing on that too, is a lot of people don't get their finances in order in the beginning. One of the things that helped us the most, even in the beginning, was we acted like a professional with our finances. So from the very first property, it was in an LLC. It had its own bank account. we had QuickBooks, we had a bookkeeper, right? And separating everything out so that when you go to banks and lenders, you look like a professional and you don't look like it's a hobby and you have everything in order and you're not like, oh, I don't know what that is, or oh, I mixed that with my personal credit or whatever. Like, act like a professional from the very beginning. Treat it like a business.
All right. Very good advice. And last question, what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Yeah, this one's an easy one for me. It's Dan Martell's Buy Back Your Time. If you've been around me at all in the past year, I talk about it a lot and too much maybe, but it's a book written for entrepreneurs. It's not real estate specific, but it really focuses on being able to live your life the way that you want to with really tangible ways of doing that. It's all about protecting your energy mostly. And so only doing the things that give you energy and delegating everything that takes your energy. And so I recommend that to anybody, even if you're like a family, a parents, and you want to live a better life with your family and your kids. Like, I think it's a really good book to be able to even think about things in that way.
All right. Great recommendation. And last thing, if any of our listeners want to find you, follow you, all that fun stuff, where can they do that?
Yep. I'm on Instagram. It's Q Cassidy W. Cassidy's with a K. And that's pretty much the only place that I'm on. But I am going to start talking to people that are following me. I want to talk to 100 people and find out what their struggles are, where they want to go, what's blocking them, and give away some free coaching and just talk to folks. So I'll be doing that soon.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. It's been a great conversation.
Avery, this is really great. Thank you so much.